And welcome to another edition of Odyssey. I'm your host, Mike Schultz. We talk about ancient mysteries and some modern mysteries as well. So here it is tonight, February 4th of 2008, and it's the eve of the Super Tuesday election, and we'll most likely be picking a presidential candidate tomorrow, it may be clear. And it's put me in such a thoughtful mood because we've really been trotted out so many corporate candidates. And so I'm just going to give you some of my thoughts and impressions about what's going on in society right now, and then for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'll get into all the ancient mysteries. And I have a lot of cryptozoology, a lot about mysterious creatures all around the world I've been researching for my new DVD, the Chupacabra and Mothman and these types of creatures. So it'll be great. What I'm noticing, the first thing that I really want to share with everybody is some good news. I think we all go online and use the main search engine we use is Google. Well, something that's real interesting to do when you go to Google is I often look at the most viewed videos, the top 20, you know, the ones that are seen all around the world by millions of people. And I'm clicking on Google right now, and the number one film is Zeitgeist. Zeitgeist is in three parts, for those of you that don't know. It's a riveting documentary, an expose of 911, what actually happened, how it was an inside job, and offers a lot of proof. It talks about the Federal Reserve, our banking system, our money system that's been stolen from us. We were never taught that in school. But they go into detail about how in 1913 a bunch of wealthy, corrupt businessmen basically stole our banking system. And they called it the Federal Reserve, although it wasn't federal and there were no reserves. That's why it's called a note. If you look at your dollar bill, it doesn't say money. It says a Federal Reserve note. It's basically paper that's no longer backed by gold. And then the first part is more controversial. It has to do with the origins of Christianity. But Zeitgeist is the number one shared movie. It's free, by the way, on Google. And then you go down the line here, and number three is Freedom to Fascism. And that's Aaron Russo, a great director who made many Hollywood films like The Rose. He was either married or boyfriend to Bette Midler. And his last film, he became friends with one of the Rockefellers, and they shared a lot of their secret plans for the New World Order, for the One World Government, how they were doing all this behind the scenes. And he was pretty shocked. They made him an offer to kind of join their cartel and their group and work with them, but he turned it down, and his last film before he died is number three on Google. It's called America, Freedom to Fascism. And he gets into the whole IRS and how the income tax is something that would shock our founding fathers and have them rolling over in their graves. If Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Adams knew about this, they never intended for our income to be taxed. That's our money. And so it gets into the IRS and the federal banking and money system once again. So that's number three. Once again, that's free and absolutely must be watched and shared with all of your friends. Once again, go to Google Video and just look at the top videos that are the most shared right now. Then I shoot down to number six here, Loose Change, second edition. These three young men, college students and recent grads, really put together a shocking documentary about 911, what actually happened that day, how there were bombs and explosives placed in the building. And I've interviewed Jason Burmes, one of the producers. It's in my archives for Odyssey. And it's been in the top 10 for a couple of years now. This Loose Change has gone all over the world. And of course, the media will never touch it or cover it, but for those of us in the alternative media who are hip to the game are well aware of Loose Change, and that's free, of course, to watch as well. Then at number seven, we have Endgame with Alex Jones, and he has a wonderful website and radio show every day. If you go to Infowars.com, that's Infowars.com, and listen to Alex's program. But Endgame is called Blueprint for Global Enslavement. And it's an expose about the New World Order, the One World Government that's coming behind the scenes. It's being put in place. It's already in place in Europe. You have 35 countries all under one umbrella. And that was sold to Europeans as simply a trade agreement in the 1970s. European economic community. But the real agenda was to create this giant global European community. And a lot of the individual countries and nations in Europe have lost a lot of their individuality. And if you know anyone in Europe or you call any friends and talk to them about it, they'll say how this was really not done out in the open at all. It was very much sold to them as a trade agreement, and then boom, before you know it, you've got a European Union. So Endgame gets into the Bilderbergs, and that's a secret group that meets once a year. All the royalty of Europe are there, Queen Beatrix of Sweden and the royal family of England, and they meet at exclusive hotels once each year, and this particular year was in Canada, and Alex Jones went up there. He tried to film. He was arrested. He documents everything that happened to him on Endgame, and once again, this is number 7 on Google, and it's free, too. He doesn't have any copyright. You can take his films and copy them or burn them or run them on your local cable TV station or whatever. He's very generous about the copyright with his films. He just wants to get his word out there. So he gets into the Bilderberg Group, which was founded in 1954. And it's 100 very powerful people that actually run the world. And in their secret meetings, they decide a lot of what's going to happen. Just to give you one example, in 1991, they invited an unknown governor from Arkansas to their meeting. Named Bill Clinton, and by 92 he was in the presidency. He came out of nowhere through the power of the Bilderbergs behind the scenes. So definitely watch Endgame for free as well. It's quite eye-opening. Once again, this is all on Google in the top 10. And as I'm looking down further and further, there's Money as Debt, another good video about the money system. It's so important, you know, we're never really taught economics or money systems as we go through school, if you went through the public school system. What we're taught is a bunch of algebra and trigonometry and math concepts that most of us will never use. And I strongly feel that we should be taught economic concepts and people should be educated and empowered, but unfortunately, the public is not aware, and they don't understand even our money system. Getting back to the presidential election, we've got Ron Paul out there trying to explain. He's the only candidate who will talk about the money system and how it's no longer based on gold or silver, or it's strictly paper money at this point that we're printing up, and the dollar is in big, big trouble. It's losing its value each year, and it's crashing. And we have to address this problem. We can't play games here anymore. We can't just pick candidates who look good, who sound nice. I know Obama sounds very nice and is a beautiful speaker and all of that, but we need someone who will address our falling dollar, our terrible money situation right now. And it has been frustrating. You know, Ron Paul won second place in Nevada and Louisiana, and that was completely ignored by the media. So we'll see. What I've heard may happen is that if he, it looks like the nomination may go to one of the corporate mainstream candidates on the Republican side, and Ron Paul may simply just run as a third-party candidate. He may go independent, and so this race may not be over. Remember, we don't vote until November. So he's been, you know, spreading his message about economics, and simply he's the only anti-war candidate out there, and. You know, we have this war in Iraq has gone on longer than World War II. I'll say that again. The Iraq war has been, we've been fighting it longer than World War II. This is a war that is nowhere in the media whatsoever. They will not show anyone fighting on TV. You can't hear about it. You can't see it. You can't see the people dying. You can't see the blood and the guts and the wounds. War is hell. War is ugly. People have their heads blown off. It's sick. It's disturbing, but yet we're not shown any of it, and it's rarely talked about. And a lot of people may not even know that we're still fighting in Afghanistan. They may have completely forgotten about that, but we're in this endless war on terror, and once again, it's very sterile, and we're not shown any of it. But, you know, constantly Americans are dying and falling in the battlefield. So Ron Paul is the only candidate who wants to end the war now. The Democrats are playing games. John Kerry 4 years ago said, I'm for the war, but I'm against the war. And Hillary and Obama are playing games. They're for it and they're against it, but they pledged to stay in another 6 years. Oprah's running around saying, well, Obama will get us out, but that's not what he's pledged. I'm not quite sure why Oprah Winfrey is saying that. I'd like to call her on it, actually. You've got to understand with Obama, his main advisor, the man behind the man, is Zbigniew Brzezinski. And anybody who studies the one world government, the new world order, knows that Brzezinski is the main architect. He's been working for decades behind the scenes to create this giant global corporation or one world government, new world order. Everyone knows that who's studied in this field. He is the Council on Foreign Relations. The CFR is a very powerful secretive group. They are the media. The reason why Obama has such good media coverage, he's treated pretty much like the second coming of Jesus Christ, or the best thing since toast or sliced bread, is because his main advisor is the media, is Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's in the Council on Foreign Relations. And they manage and control Time magazine, and they have complete access to ABC, NBC, and CBS. And so this is why they have complete carte blanche and complete access to the media and glowing positive reviews. And so that's why people, and McCain as well, that's why they're on the cover of Time magazine, because that's managed by the CFR. It always has been. McCain and Obama and Hillary Clinton are probably the three main candidates they're pushing right now. So what you've got to understand, as I studied the media, is that it's been bought and paid for since the 1920s. There was a very wealthy man named J.P. Morgan, who's well-known to anyone who studies American history, and a billionaire, and he tried to figure out how he could control the media, and it turned out all he had to do was buy about 25 newspapers. Back then, this was before television, and get controlling interest of 25 newspapers. And that's what he did. He bought them out, or at least 51%, enough to control. And then he simply placed 25 editors in key spots at these newspapers. He didn't need some massive conspiracy. He just needed one editor at the top of the paper. All of the journalists at the bottom or the reporters could do whatever they want. As long as you've got one person, a key person in the editorial spot, who can censor a story or promote a story, that's all you need. So it just takes a very tiny group at the top of the pyramid to control a nation. And David Icke writes great books about this, about how most people, 98%, are really in a need-to-know position. They just need to follow orders. They don't need to know this whole agenda of a new world order or one world government. You just need that very top echelon, and that's all that you need to control the media. So ever since the 1920s, when J.P. Morgan has controlled interest of newspapers, it's been a rigged game, and that's why it's so amazing that the Internet has broken through. And we can get alternative media now. As in the past 10 years, a lot has really opened up. And once again, all these films are free. We can share them on the Internet. And this has always been secretive, closed information that's now being shared by millions and millions. And, of course, we have Internet radio the BBS radio network, where we can share all of this information. And I know all of you are on the main page of BBS Radio, and I know there's a lot on the website, but I do want to point out the TNT news service. It's very important that you go and you look at these stories and you read the TNT headlines, because, honestly, almost all of these stories are never reported in the corporate media. You know, as I look through these each day, this is important information that you need to have. And the mainstream corporate media is a very, very heavy filter, and it's not going to give this information to you. What they do often is they throw up smoke screens. There's a pop singer in Hollywood. They report on her a lot. I'm not going to mention her name. We all know who it is. But we're she's a smokescreen. She's used to throw off our attention for a little while. Or they'll pick a murder trial like an O.J. Simpson or Scott Peterson, and they'll blow it way out of proportion, and for a year we'll get headlines about some murder trial. And this is all a smokescreen, while some very important legislation may be passed or may go through, or, you know, a budget is passed of $300 billion, or we're committed once again to pay for more fighting in Iraq, and big decisions are made, we're thrown these smoke screens. I think last year, gosh, they spent a month or two on a young actress, Anna Nicole Smith, who died, and the media just went wild with this person who, you know, it's fine for the gossip magazines to cover that, but the mainstream media was all over that story for a couple months. It was a big smokescreen. So please don't fall for it. Please don't fall for these silly stories. And keep your eye on the ball. And just go to these alternative websites. I mentioned Alex Jones, InfoWars. If you simply go to InfoWars once a day, you'll be well informed within a few weeks, very well informed as to what's actually happening. And the BBS Radio, if you just go to their main page and read the TNT articles, and watch the videos at TNT. That's where it's at. That's where all the hip, alternative, in-the-know people, the cutting-edge people, are going for their news. We're not going to stand for this nonsense any longer. So it's called the TNT, the Trusted News Trader, and it's about halfway down the main page on the website. So anyway, a couple more, just to give you an example, I'm going to throw out two big stories this week that the mainstream media did not cover whatsoever, and yet they're big in the internet, and they're very big stories, and they're important. And the first one is that there is a giant, massive island of plastics and trash and pollution. It's of the size of the United States, believe it or not. It's over 1,000 miles, and it's sitting out in the Pacific Ocean. And I found this story on Rents.com. Jeff Rents is a great news reporter, and he has wonderful headlines each day. And this is one of his headlines at RENSE.com. That's RENSE.com. And there's just a giant, giant island of trash in the Pacific Ocean of plastics and styrofoam and all kinds of waste product. And this is something people need to know about. This is really disturbing. Some of it is washing up on the beaches in Hawaii, and they just don't know what to do about it. But it needs to be spotlighted so people can really wake up and maybe start taking their own shopping bags to the market instead of using the same ones over and over, or using a glass instead of styrofoam and throwing the styrofoam away, and just really start doing green environmental things, because this should be a lead story in the news. We should see the images. I've seen a picture on Rents of this horrible trash in the ocean. And it's something we need to be made aware of. And we can't just bury our heads in the sand on this one. We only have this one small planet. So that's one of the big stories that just shocked me just today. And once again, always riveting information on TNT, on Rents, and InfoWars. Those are the three main sites I go to. And very important topics. And then the second story that I just found out about today, a major pop star, Willie Nelson, has come forward and said 911 is an inside job. It was an explosion. He said it looks just like the demolition of the hotels in Las Vegas that they blow up when they no longer want them. He believes, you know, bombs were planted in the building so that they fell straight down. One of the buildings, building number 7, was not even hit by a plane, and the media never wants you to focus on building number 7, which was a 47-story skyscraper, and it fell that same day straight down within 8 seconds. It was never hit by a plane, and that's never been adequately explained to the American public. And, of course, those of you who have researched the photographs of the Pentagon taken from every single angle just simply cannot find a large 757. And all of the horrible remnants that you would normally see, the fuselage and the burning seats and the charred bodies and the luggage and the horrible carnage that you would normally see from a 757, and the front of the Pentagon lawn are just not there. It appears that it was some kind of smaller missile or something that may have looked like a plane from a distance. It may have had wings, but it left a perfectly circular 16-foot hole in the side of the Pentagon, which, once again, just don't take my word for it. Just research it online and look at the photos taken that morning by the Army and by AP. Those were the main photographers there, and it appears to have been some type of a global Hawk missile or something. And one more thing about the Pentagon you have to understand is that not a single blade of grass was damaged in the whole lawn, the whole green grass lawn. And surely, just using common sense, if you're going to have a major plane crash, you're going to have damage to the lawn, to the ground. And there's just nothing. The grass is just pristine and perfect. And once you see that, the dominoes just start falling over one by one by one very quickly, and you realize that 911 was a grand illusion. And they did it, this global elite, because they know they control the media. Except for a few outlets like the Coast to Coast radio station and the internet, they control all, you know, the major networks. So they knew that there would be some reporting that day, that first day, but that would quickly be buried, and then they'd be able to just gloss over it and go to some story about an actress in Hollywood dying or somebody overdosing on drugs or a pop star or something like that. They could just move on. But what they didn't count on is that people would be able to, the technology, that people would be able to make documentaries and burn them by the millions, and they didn't count on that. So there is a large group, it's estimated to be about 35-40% of the American public, who doesn't buy the official 911 story. We're not going along with it, and the battle lines have really been drawn here. We don't trust our government any longer. We feel there's a shadow government, and so there may never be an investigation, but certainly we're watching them, and they're watching us, and we're going to see who blinks first. And in other countries, that number is even higher. There's just a complete disbelief in the official 911 story. So anyway, Willie Nelson, you know, major pop star, has come forward in completely disbelief of the official story, and that should have been major news somewhere in the media, but it wasn't. It was on Alex Jones' InfoWars today. It's an interview you can listen to. But he joins a whole chorus of powerful people in Hollywood. Certainly Rosie O'Donnell came forward with very powerful statements about 911, and she was thrown off the air that week on ABC of her show, The View. And I hope people were able to put two and two together and understand that they were related, her being thrown off the air and her her views on 911. Excuse me, I'm going to pause and take a drink here. And Charlie Sheen, a famous actor, of course, has come forward with his statements about 911. And James Brolin, a Hollywood actor, and he's the husband of Barbara Streisand, so she hasn't officially come forward, but I'm certain that she's behind the scenes on this as well. Her husband has made very strong statements publicly, James Brolin, about 911. And Ed Asner, who I've met, actually, I met him on a plane flight, and he's very adamant about not believing the official story. So the point I'm trying to make is something's going to break in Hollywood. It's not going to break anywhere else. I think a group of actors or powerful celebrities are going to come together, and they're going to produce some kind of art, whether it's a film or a book or a play or something about 911, and that's going to finally break it completely. So I'm not sure when it will happen. It's been 6.5 years or so since 911. It may happen in the next 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or something. But there's too many powerful, important people that have looked into 911 and are going to, once and for all, break the story. Especially once Bush and Cheney leave the White House, there may be nobody guarding the fence anymore. So we'll see. But at some point, some major figures will start talking. So anyway, those are my comments on kind of what's going on today on the eve of this election. And just before we get into our ancient mysteries and our cryptozoology, You know, I talk with people a lot when I give lectures. I produce DVDs on ancient mysteries, and I talk about just how you can get out of the matrix or how you can leave the matrix. And I almost think of our society as a group of people watching a movie or a film. And I try to show people how to step behind the curtain, step behind the screen, and see what real life is really all about. So I'm going to give you a couple ideas of how you can leave the matrix and become a truly free person. You know, one way is to read the David Icke books. It's spelled I-C-K-E, David Icke. And he's an English researcher. He does tremendous research. If you look at the footnotes for his book, there's just hundreds and hundreds of footnotes. He really documents everything, and he writes books about the New World Order and the global government and behind-the-scenes information, and he just frees you up so you're no longer a prisoner or a slave of society or the media. I don't believe every single thing he says, but I believe a lot of it, you know, a good 80-85%. I'm on board with him. So David Icke, just reading his books, one or two of his books, would be a first good step, actually. Another way is simply to cut way back on television. Television is a mind control device. It's there's been studies that have been shown it's more addictive than opium. So it's truly the opiate of the masses, and commercials are just devastating to your mental health. They spend millions, these companies, on psychologically manipulating you to feel a certain way, and they tie it to products. So you're really being manipulated. If you sit down for a night of television, let's say 2 hours of TV, you're watching, 80 or 90 or 100 commercials, maybe more, within 2 hours. And that's a tremendous amount of repetition, of stupid commercials, of dumbness, of psychological messages, like I said, manipulating your mind to purchase goods and services and making you feel a certain way. Your emotions are being pulled and tugged and manipulated. So I just talk to people about cutting back on TV, and what I've done is, you know, there are some good things on television that we all enjoy, is I pick out 5 shows a week, and I even check them off. I have a little list, you know, sometimes. I just check off. I allow myself 5 programs a week that I enjoy, maybe a sitcom or, you know, a drama on TV or something like a documentary or the Travel Channel, something to relax, and that's it. When my 5 shows are done, I no longer channel surf. I no longer will endlessly go up and down the dial. That's gone out of my life. I set a date, or you can even tape them, which is better, or then you don't see any commercials. You can run right past them. And that's, I call it a television diet. That's really the best way to get yourself out of that prism. And if you can't do that, maybe it's best that the TV not be in your home. And then just getting out more in society, meeting people, doing activities. One thing I like to do, and I tell people, is just get involved with your Parks and Recreations Department. You know, every city has it, and I'm involved. I do a little work for my Park and Recreations, and I do activities, play volleyball and tennis, and you meet people, you interact with people, and just do things like that, healthy social things in your community at night. You'll feel better. So that's the second thing I recommend. You know, first, the David Icke books, and second, the television diet. And then third, I talk to people about getting off of aspartame. This was put into our soda pop and a lot of our gum and our mints and our candies. And many, many products, aspartame, in the 1980s. And the main guy who promoted it was Donald Rumsfeld, who was managing the Iraq War. He was involved in getting aspartame into many, many of our products. And you can research it. There's all kinds of studies about aspartame, about how damaging it is to your health, and how it can result in mental confusion and just a passive nature, and it can really scramble your mind, I believe, anyway. So I would recommend getting off aspartame. Just simply switch over to a health food store, a Whole Foods, a Trader Joe's, some kind of Whole Food store, instead of your supermarket with your fluorescent lights and your packaged products full of chemicals. I did that a couple of years ago. I haven't been into a major chain store in a couple of years, and that's made a huge difference in my life. So just switch over. There's plenty of soda pop out there without aspartame. And just look at the labels and see if it's a natural ingredient or not. So that's the third suggestion I have. The fourth one is to get off of fluoride. You know, I don't have a toothpaste with fluoride anymore. I don't have water with fluoride in it. A lot of the tap water in most cities has been fluoridated. And the first major group to use fluoride was Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. They tested it on the Jews, and apparently it makes the public passive. And studies have been shown that it lowers the IQ. And my research into the New World Order indicates that there's all kinds of these programs out there, whether it's television or fluoride or aspartame, to just make the public passive or dumb them down or make them sheep or make them cattle. So they'll just go along with the plans, whatever they may be, whether it's the Iraq War or the Vietnam War or the war in Panama or the Cold War or whatever. Just keep people passive, because remember, we greatly outnumber them, about 100,000 to 1. And that's why I'm positive, because people are waking up. Believe me, people are waking up. Each year, newspaper circulation goes way down, television ratings go down, and the internet is up, up, up. And people are switching over to alternative radio and media like this. So I'm very hopeful and positive and encouraged. So fluoride, if you can get that out of your diet for a while, I think you'll see a difference. I don't think you'll go back to it. Like I said, there's plenty of toothpaste out there at Trader Joe's or whatever without fluoride, or any health food store has it. And you can drink, you know, bottled water without fluoride, and I think you'll feel a difference. I think your mind will be sharper and clearer, and your memory will come back, and you know, just all these drugs like Prozac, and try to limit their involvement in your life and not turn to them. But try to solve your problems and figure them out yourself instead of running to a crutch like Prozac or alcohol or something of that nature. And then the last suggestion I have is we have to stop the chemtrails. We're being sprayed with chemicals. You can look online right now if you want. Just type in chemtrails in a search engine, and you'll see all the chemicals that have been sprayed all throughout the world, actually. And this has been going on for 10 years now. A normal contrail will disappear within 30 seconds. You can look at airports and normal planes, and you can see the contrails disappear within 30 seconds. That's a perfectly normal vapor trail. But the problem is we're being sprayed in a grid-like checkerboard pattern. Mostly our cities, our major cities. And it lingers in the air for up to 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. And they turn into these hazy, smoky, artificial cloud cover. And a lot of people have done testing into chemtrails, and they've found barium and aluminum and heavy metals, allegedly. So research this issue and call your congressmen and your senators and your local politicians and tell them about it. Tell them you're concerned. There's been stories of some towns and cities that have gotten rid of chemtrails just because some people have woken up and spoken about them. But I do believe they're dumbing down the population, and we have to get rid of them. One thing you can do, just right on your own, I know it seems like, you know, you're powerless against the government and all that, but you can call upon the sky spirits, the sylphs of the sky. And these sky spirits sometimes you see them. It's like a wispy cloud. Usually they're in the shape of like an animal, like a bird or whooping crane, and it will come across the sky and it will break up the chemtrail. Don't take my word for this. You have to do it for yourself or see it for yourself. And I have personally witnessed this, and I've just called upon the sky spirits and angels to break up the chemtrails just with a pure and a loving intent. And I've seen them completely break up. You know, we get sprayed a lot here in Portland, Oregon, where I'm broadcasting from, and I've seen them break up the whole sky. So we do have a lot of good spirits and entities out there helping us, and the light is brighter and stronger than the darkness. I firmly believe that. And one thing, I go to a health food store in Los Angeles sometimes, and Robin Jones, the owner of the Living Temple, told me, he said, you know, it's a formula. It's 75-25. In my store, I have about 25% where I talk about I have documentaries on the New World Order and the Bilderberg Group and the secretive Masons and all of these people. And that's about 25%, the chemtrails and Bohemian Grove and all of this stuff. But you know what? 75% is positive material. It's coconut oils and hemp and dark chocolate and healthy mega vitamins and all these things that are good for you, yoga and Reiki. And my store, he said, is 75% positive and then 25% the darker stuff. You have to be aware of it. It's like if you have termites in your house. You have to occasionally do a termite inspection and just check where they are in the wood and just monitor the situation. But don't put your attention or focus on them. Just know what they're doing, and then you can vote accordingly and, you know, vote for people like Ron Paul or join a third party or come up with some alternatives. And not just follow the sheep or the flock. And then the 75%, the majority of your life, focus on what you do want to do, whether it's, you know, creating music or dancing or singing or art or whatever you want to go out in this world and create. And so that should be your formula. We don't want to get wrapped up in this dark stuff. But we do need to be aware of it and talk about it once in a while and know that it's there, like 911 and things of that nature. So now I'm going to shift into a new DVD I'm working on, and it's all about cryptozoology, which is just a fascinating subject. I researched all of these legends of creatures all around the world, and I just found that there were dozens and dozens and dozens of them. So I simply had to highlight kind of the best of the best or the most interesting ones and then talk about those in my new DVD that's going to come out. So I'm going to read you a little bit of this article, and then I'll comment for you. So this is about the Chupacabra and Mothman and etc. So there are legends all throughout Europe of trolls and dwarfs and leprechauns that live under bridges or in caves. They appear to know secret entrances to underworld tunnels, for they are able to quickly disappear when spotted by humans. There is a frequent theme of wanting to kidnap humans or partake of human genetics, as in the fable of Rumpelstiltskin. If you recall, in the tale of Rumpelstiltskin, the dwarf came to help a young woman turn straw into gold at a spinning wheel. But in exchange for her help, for his help, he made her promise to give him her firstborn child. Also consider the popular legends of the Mothman, Bigfoot, the Chupacabra, and the Jersey Devil, and werewolves, and many other assorted creatures around the globe. These creatures often appear to be animal-human hybrids. The Mothman looks like a cross between a human and a type of bird with large wings. The Chupacabra is known for stealing livestock or cattle, and oftentimes organs within the animal are missing. For hundreds of years, people have sighted a strange winged creature in the pine forests of New Jersey, known as the Jersey Devil. Bigfoot sightings are frequent in the northwest U.S. and the forests of eastern Texas, believe it or not. This being also seems to be able to disappear into hidden caverns and is smart enough not to get caught. So let's go into cryptozoology in a little more detail. We're going to start with the Jersey Devil. I looked into some kind of local legends. It's very well known if you live in the eastern coast of the United States, but in other portions of the country, the Jersey Devil is not known at all. So let me talk a bit about this creature. There are many different tales and legends surrounding the mysterious Jersey Devil. The sightings of this strange creature stretch back for several hundred years in and around the pine forests of New Jersey. Many of the legends refer to a woman named Mrs. Leeds, who either curses her baby and the child is transformed into a creature with horns, a tail and wings, and the head of a horse. The wooden cottage of the Leeds family still stands in the Pinelands to this day. A naval commander named Stephen Decatur shot a cannonball at the Jersey Devil in the 1800s, but it did not appear hurt and continued flying away. The brother of Napoleon, Joseph Bonaparte, reported seeing the creature during hunting trips in the early 1800s. The greatest sighting, however, occurred in 1909 when witnesses saw a flying creature with glowing eyes fly down the street. Others saw it as well, and reported that it made a loud screaming sound. The next day, almost every resident in Burlington, New Jersey, had hoof prints in their yard. These strange prints went up trees and onto rooftops. Later that same week, eyewitnesses got a very close look and described the Jersey Devil as 3.5 feet high, with back legs like a crane, but with horse's hooves. The being had large wings and a head like a horse and a long tail. This type of description is quite reminiscent of the strange hybrids written about in the ancient Egypt and Sumerian texts, and may be confirmation that these types of beings have existed for a long time. There have been other major sightings during the 1950s or 60s, and oftentimes there are reports of the Jersey Devil raiding farms and killing dogs, cats, and birds. Even large German shepherds have been killed during these sightings. One last note is that in 1957, the Department of Conservation found a strange corpse with feathers and hind legs, but it was never identified. So that's a paragraph I've written on this strange creature, and it was such a massive sighting in 1909, witnessed by dozens of people in many, many geographic areas, that it kind of forever put the Jersey Devil on the map. And the sightings have been smaller since then, but that's what generally happens in cryptozoology. If you have a massive sighting by a whole group of people, it tends to permanently put it on the map. So it appears this is some kind of animal-human hybrid. And, of course, some of the sightings are going to be false or fictitious, but I do believe that many of these sightings are real and that they're true, and that we may need to really look underground as the source of these creatures. I think there's so much beneath the surface of the earth that has been unexplored, and all of these caverns and caves. And my understanding of if you get into the whole reptilian aliens and the Anunnaki, is that if you read the Book of Enoch, there's a group of them that were condemned underneath the earth. They were got in trouble. They mated with women, with humans. They had sex. That produced an offspring, the giants of the Old Testament, of the Bible. They got in big trouble for that, if you read the Book of Enoch. And a whole group of them were condemned to the underworld, underneath the earth. So this whole idea of hell and Satan, there may be a very practical explanation for it. It may simply be a group underground. And they were geneticists, these Anunnaki. If you read the Sitchin books, you certainly know about this. And they may have been creating some weird animal-human hybrids like the Jersey Devil or that kind of thing that may occasionally go up to the surface, to the earth, and perform some kind of deed or something and bring back some genetics down below. Once again, a lot of these tales and legends like Rumpelstiltskin, this little dwarf or troll, there's always this theme of needing human genetics or stealing babies or something along these lines, and certainly with leprechauns in Ireland as well, that's a key theme, is stealing and abduction of children. So let's move on. Let's talk about the Chupacabra. During the 1970s, there was a strange series of animal killings in Puerto Rico blamed on El Vampiro de Moca, or possibly a satanic cult. This incident turned out to be a precursor to a wave of animal killings on farms all throughout the island in the early 1990s. The creature killed dogs, birds, horses, and many goats, leading to its nickname of Chupacabra, which means goat sucker in Spanish. All of the animals had two or three small round incisions near their neck, and all of their blood was drained. There was generally no other type of mutilation. Later, these incidents were reported in other Latin American countries and in the U.S., in North and South Carolina and Maryland. Many eyewitnesses have glimpsed this mysterious creature, which only ventures out at night, and have offered various descriptions. Some believe it is a lizard type of being with scaly greenish skin and spines running down its back. It stands up on 2 feet and is about 4 feet high, able to hop like a kangaroo. This frightening creature is described as having sharp fangs and a dog-like face. It makes a loud screeching sound, and many have reported a strong smell of sulfur around the Chupacabra. This type of odor may be an indicator that it is a creature of the underworld, where sulfuric fumes are common. Another unusual feature are the glowing red eyes that stand out in the night. Some of the other descriptions resemble a wallaby or dog that stands on its hind legs. This wild type of creature has a pronounced spinal ridge with large teeth and claws. Occasionally, the chupacabra will try to attack humans, and the terrified victims report that it resembles a gargoyle with glowing red eyes. So as I researched the chupacabra of Puerto Rico and Latin America, I really found a lot of similarities with the Jersey Devil. It may be really a similar type of creature, actually. It sounds like it's highly intelligent. Once again, it may know the entrances and exits to the underworld quite well and be able to slip in and out to the surface, and seems to be quite interested in animal genetics, the chupacabra. So now let's go on to a similar creature called the Mothman. The entity known as the Mothman has similar features to the Jersey Devil, with glowing eyes, large bat-like wings, and the appearance of some type of animal-human hybrid. The Mothman terrorized the townsfolk of West Virginia during a 13-month period of 1966 and 67. The sightings actually started in 1922 and continue to this day, but the largest group of sightings occurred during the late 1960s. On November 15, 1966, two couples were driving by an old military TNT factory near Point Pleasant, West Virginia. All four noticed two glowing red lights near the entrance gate and were shocked to realize that these lights were actually glowing red eyes belonging to a monster that was 7 feet tall with large wings on its back. Boy, can you imagine? They quickly drove off and reached a speed of 100 miles an hour, but the being chased them to the city limits, so that means this creature was flying 100 miles an hour to keep up with the car. The next day, a group of townsfolk came back with guns, and some of them also witnessed this entity with glowing red eyes staring at them. There were many more sightings by other law-abiding citizens who had no reason to lie or nothing to gain. Some reported a loud screeching sound from the Mothman and red eyes, similar to the chupacabra. They continued until the collapse of the Silver Bridge in December of 1967, which killed 46 people. Some have speculated that the Mothman shows up in the months preceding a tragedy, as he appeared to leave town after the bridge fell. So, once again, I somewhat tie in the Jersey Devil, the Chupacabra, and the Mothman all together. I think there's similar types of beings or creatures that come out at night with animal-human type of descriptions. And you've got to understand, you know, look back in ancient Egypt. What were they, you know, making art and statues about, depicting? They were animal-human hybrids. They were half crocodiles and half lions and half humans. And a lot of the statues or deities or gods were these type of strange creatures. Anubis, the god or demigod of the underworld, was had the head of a jackal, for instance, and the body of a human. Now, I don't believe these beings actually looked like that. I think they were symbolic. I think they were taking characteristics of animals and explaining that these Anunnaki were different. They were simply different than humans, and so they were depicting them as such. But I also feel that they had heard stories about strange creatures who existed before the flood, when there was a lot of genetic manipulation. So back in Egypt in 3000 BC, they were close enough to people who were relatives who may have survived the flood that they had heard tales and legends about creatures who used to be on this planet. And certainly giants were very prominent and were roaming all over the planet before the flood. And going back further, there were dinosaurs. So there may well have been genetic experiments and manipulation and strange and weird creatures back then that the Egyptians were referring to. And once again, a lot of them may have gone underground and will still be here to this day. So let's talk about one more, and it's I'm pretty sure almost none of you have heard of this one. I try to find some really obscure topics, and this one is called the Flores Island Hobbit. Let's explore a unique type of human being from the South Pacific. The isolated small Flores Islands have always had legends of tiny people living amongst the trees. Recently, scientists made a discovery that may verify that claim. They have found the skeletal remains of seven small humanoid beings who stood about 3 feet tall. They do not believe these to be dwarfs, but an actual separate species that existed 12,000 years ago. Scientists have named these fossils the Flores Island Hobbit in reference to their location in Indonesia and small stature. They note that the brain of the hobbit is smaller than humans, about the size of a monkey. Scientists estimate that this being lived in the South Pacific from 95,000 years ago until the Ice Age, 12,000 years ago, when I believe the poles shifted and the continents of Atlantis and Lemuria sunk suddenly, and some new continents appeared, the Americas and Europe, etc. And I think that was halfway through the Mayan calendar cycle of 26,000 years, and at that halfway point the poles shifted, and this wiped out this group of Flores Island hobbits. They discovered a number of stone tools and weapons, apparently used to hunt game as well. The natives of Flores Island have told researchers that these hobbits inhabited the island as little as 300 years ago. According to their tales, they kidnapped human babies from the island, and this enraged the local tribes, who eventually retaliated by hunting down and killing all of the hobbits. So once again, we have tales of kidnapping human babies and possibly using their genetics. Other unusual types of animal fossils were found on the island, including dwarf elephants and giant lizards known as the Komodo dragon, which can grow to 10 feet tall. This dragon can still be found on remote islands such as Borneo and is a possible ancestor to larger reptilian dragons of the past. So it's very intriguing, this different species of human that's been found in Flores Island in near the Philippines in the South Pacific. So it's really important to research the whole ancient astronaut theory and the Anunnaki. It's something I've spent years doing, and I've produced a couple DVDs that summarize it quite well. And I encourage all of you to go to my page at bbsradio.com for the show, which is called Odyssey. And click on the Odyssey page. Once again, I'm the host, Mike Schultz. And my first DVD is titled The Sands of Time, and it's a general overview of the whole ancient astronaut theory. And I personally no longer believe in kind of the official version of the church and state of how human beings got here on this planet and what we're doing here. I think there's a more complex story that does involve ETs or UFOs or advanced astronauts who were present on the planet a couple thousand years ago. And they were called gods at the time. The Egyptians called them the gods. The Greeks called them the gods. The Romans called them the gods. In Mexico, they referred to Quetzalcoatl and the gods. In India, the ancient scripts, the Vedas, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, they called them the Egyptian gods who came down from the sky. The Chinese believed in the gods who came down from the sky. And so every primitive ancient culture in the world, I actually call them pretender gods. They tried to control humans and certainly use humans as a workforce and slaves at the time. And they built pyramids. That was the type of architecture that they was important to them. Certainly, pyramids have very little use to human beings, but they were from a different culture, a different area, and they wanted pyramids, and that's what they built all over the world. And a lot of times they used pharaohs and priests as intermediaries. They were somewhat secretive, so they weren't seen that well, and they were certainly erased from history. It was really interesting. I remember reading some obscure Freemason texts, and they talk about these gods as well, these pretender gods, who shared some knowledge with the original Freemason groups and told them the kind of hidden history of the planet. So my first DVD, The Sands of Time, really takes us back to 6000 BC, where we have clay tablets and hard evidence and important facts that talk about what was happening at that time, and this third party, this third group. And so please go to my website, email me, and for $20 I'll send it out to you. There's no sponsor to this show. It's I sell my DVDs to the audience, and that helps keep it all going, you know, so I can keep researching. So we will arrange for the payment through PayPal, which I use as a secure way to transfer money. So just email me, and I'll arrange a $20 shipment of The Sands of Time. My second DVD is more advanced information. It's the Temples of Stone, and it gets into some of the modern-day mysteries I talked about, like chemtrails and crop circles, as well as more evidence of ancient astronauts in underwater temples in Japan and in Cambodia. There's a giant complex called Angkor Wat, which I believe was also engineered by these Anunnaki. So anyway, I feel it's an important topic, and my DVDs are good summaries because, yeah, I know we don't have a lot of time. We don't have hours and hours to bury ourselves in all of this research and read all of these heavy, thick books. You know, Zachariah Sitchin is great, but his books are heavy and they're dense, and there's dozens of his books, and sometimes you just don't have time to read all that. And so I summarize it in a DVD format with lots of pictures. I make it easy. So once again, go to Odyssey, my page on the website, and please check it out. And like I said, email me, and I can shoot you out the DVDs for $20 each. So anyway, once again, I'm based in Portland, Oregon, but I often go up and down the West Coast giving lectures, and we are at the end of the hour, believe it or not. So please listen to my archives. I have about 60 shows, all about ancient mysteries and real cutting-edge metaphysical information. I have great guests from around the world. And so please check out the archives, and remember to just share all this information and try to pull yourself out of the matrix and disconnect from the media. You don't always have to listen to the news when you're driving or in the car or on the radio or have the television blasting. Just try to turn off the media so you can kind of hear your inner voice and your inner guidance and get some real direction and some peace in your life. So thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Mike Schultz, and thanks for listening to Odyssey, and I will talk to you in 2 weeks. Take care, everybody, and good night.